This is the intro for Decatur, Part 1.
Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, February 20th, 2020. We'll start with an article on the front page, headlined, Illinois Government, Pritzker Unveils $42 Billion Budget. Hopes Pinned to Graduated Tax, Area Lawmakers Critical, by Jamie Monks, Dan Petrella, and Rick Pearson, Chicago Tribune, Springfield. Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker delivered a state budget address Wednesday, acknowledging a challenging picture of Illinois finances and offering improved funding for government services if voters adopt his graduated income tax plan. Pritzker's $42 billion budget proposal would provide $1.4 billion in additional funding for schools and public safety if voters in November pass the graduated rate proposal, which would replace the state's constitutionally mandated flat income tax. As important as the investments are, we cannot responsibly spend for these priorities until we know with certainty what the state's revenue picture will be, Pritzker said. The proposed constitutional amendment, Pritzker's signature initiative, would raise an estimated $3.6 billion on an annual basis. If it is adopted by the voters, Pritzker has said rates previously passed by the legislature would boost the income tax burden on the wealthiest 3% of taxpayers, with the other 97% paying at least the same or less. Pritzker's proposed budget that would boost funding for child welfare, public education, and Illinois' chronically strained pension systems if the graduated rate income tax is approved. The tax would kick in January 1st and raise an estimated $1.4 billion in the budget year beginning July 1st. Without a shift to a graduated income tax, the state for the first time would fall short of making the $350 million increase in public schools spending required by an education funding formula approved in 2017. Pritzker's backup plan would lower that amount by $150 million. With the state's public employee pension debt approaching $140 billion, Pritzker pledged that $100 million in revenue from a graduated income tax would be added to the state's annual pension payments. He also said that figure should be doubled in subsequent years. This is not a political football. This is a financial issue that is complex and requires consistency and persistence to manage, with the goal of paying the pensions that are owed, he said. Pritzker said those seeking a state constitutional amendment to reduce public employee benefits were pursuing a fantasy. The idea that all of this can be fixed with a single silver bullet ignores the protracted legal battle, what will ultimately run headlong into the Contracts Clause of the U.S. Constitution, he said. You will spend years in that protracted legal battle, and when you're done, you will have simply kicked the can down the road, made another broken promise to taxpayers, and left them with higher tax bills. The state constitution currently describes pension benefits as a contractual relationship, and that benefits granted cannot be diminished or impaired. But Pritzker said the state should also pursue alternatives, such as expanding a pension buyout program, begun last year. Senator Chapin Rose, Republican of Mahomet, was critical of new spending. There's a lot that I agreed with him on, and there were certainly some worthy priorities in this budget. But the Democrats just passed one of the biggest income tax hikes in state history in 2017, and it's still not enough, he said in a statement. They want more money in tax increases to cover their $1.6 billion in new spending. At the end of the day, I am concerned that it seems like it's never enough for them. Said Representative Dan Calkins, Republican of Decatur, "What I have witnessed today is another proposed budget filled with promises that can't be kept. Last year's budget was not balanced, and neither is the governor's budget proposed for this year. The state can't continue to increase spending year over year and expect to have a balanced budget." During the speech, Pritzker also assailed a small group of downstate Republicans who back long-shot efforts to separate Chicago from Illinois. Trying to separate Chicago from the rest of Illinois, whether rhetorically or literally, will not solve the economic challenges of downstate Illinois, he said. Quite the opposite. So, some of you need to stop pretending that one part of Illinois can exist without all of the others. We are one Illinois. Members of the 32 lawmaker Illinois Legislative Black Caucus said Pritzker's budget proposal is a good start, but needs more money and support for people of color. I was so pleased to hear so many things that the governor mentioned that have been issues that the Black Caucus has fought for many years, said Black Caucus Chair Senator Kimberly Lightfoot, Democrat of Maywood. Among the top issues discussed by caucus members after the address was education funding, from kindergarten through college graduation. Pritzker's proposed budget would increase K-12 school funding by $350 million, but $150 million that is tied to the passage of a graduated income tax. That tax will go before voters in November in the form of a constitutional amendment that increases income taxes on people earning more than $250,000 annually. While his speech suggests that $350 million would allocate toward funding, "We know the reality based on the revenue outlook," said State Representative Will Davis, Democrat, Homewood. "Our message to the governor is this funding level must be realized." Davis, who sits on the House committee that deals with K-12 education spending, says the budget should include even more funding for schools. "If we truly believe that education is the great equalizer, as we believe it to be, our overall funding as for K-12 must be no less than $500 million, he said. Representative Carol Ammons, Democrat, Urbana, who chairs the House Higher Education Committee, was pleased to hear Pritzker's proposed funding increases for early childhood education and universities. But she said the caucus plans to work with the governor to address structural racism faced by Black communities. Ammons said that 19% of Black fourth graders are proficient in reading, compared to 46% of white fourth graders, according to last year's National Assessment of Educational Progress. "If our students are not able to read at the K-12 level, and they lack resources at the K-12 level, and they lack the closing of the gap in educational attainment, then it is very difficult for us to take these dollars and turn them into real leadership for our community," she said. Senator Andy Menar, Democrat, Bunker Hill, a lead budget negotiator in the Illinois Senate, praised the additional funding for infrastructure and schools. "I appreciate the governor's commitment to funding education, but it is concerning that the proposal leaves open the possibility that our budget may not meet the established progress we expect toward school funding equity. In any case, in any tax structure, the right to a high-quality public education doesn't change, nor does our responsibility under the law to see it through," he said. Though Pritzker sought to promote optimism and decry what he said was a cynicism that had become rampant in talking about Illinois finances, he was blunt when he told lawmakers, "Our choices remain hard, our financial situation challenging." After years of poor fiscal management, of past leaders lying about how we got here, of scapegoating the wrong people and problems, our constituents deserve some honesty, he said. "No amount of wishful thinking will wave away our structural deficit or our pension obligations. No amount of lip service will balance the budget or fund our schools or improve public safety," he said. Pritzker said his proposal adopted a disciplined approach to managing our limited resources while also investing in the very efforts that will make our state stronger: better schools, greater public safety, more job-creating businesses, improved care for our most vulnerable children and seniors. Pritzker accused his predecessor, one-term Republican Bruce Rauner, of seeking to lower the wages of workers, trying to bankrupt the state, and seeking to destroy government. "Didn't work," Pritzker added. The governor's budget proposal is a starting point for budget negotiations leading up to the May 31st deadline for lawmakers to approve a state spending plan. Pritzker used Wednesday's address to a joint session of the Illinois House and Senate to make the case that his graduated income tax proposal is key to the long-term stability of the state's historically shaky finances. Regardless of the outcome of the graduated income tax vote, Pritzker is asking lawmakers to increase funding for the long-troubled Department of Children and Family Services by nearly $147 million in an effort to ease caseloads for child welfare workers and better protect kids in the agency's care. Pritzker's proposal also counts on the state taking in $46 million in adult-use cannabis revenues for the budget year that begins July 1st, which will be the first full budget year with recreational marijuana revenue flowing into state coffers. Of that money, $10 million would go to reducing the state's $7 billion backlog in bills. Tracking the news, what happened? Governor J.B. Pritzker proposed a $40.7 billion state budget Wednesday, virtually flat from the current level, but dressed it up by dangling the prospect of a $1.4 billion revenue boost if voters approve a radical income tax overhaul this fall. How much? The second-year Democrat presented a fiscal outline that would boost spending in key areas. What's next? Pritzker is holding $150 million of that in reserve, to be used next year if the state constitution is rewritten to uphold a graduated tax on larger incomes. He said the new tax structure, if approved in the November election, would produce $1.4 billion more in revenue in the second half of the fiscal year that begins July 1st. Corruption case. Blagojevich gives praise to Trump. By Michael Tarm and Kathleen Foody, Associated Press, Chicago. Former Illinois Democratic Governor Rod Blagojevich gushed about Donald Trump a day after the Republican president set him free from a federal prison, delivering a 20-minute monologue Wednesday outside his Chicago home that sounded like an extended campaign commercial. Standing before a crowd of more than 100 reporters and well-wishers at the steps of his house, the governor-turned-convicted felon even offered an endorsement of Trump's bid for a second term. "I'm a Trumpocrat," said the one-time contestant on Trump's reality TV show, Celebrity Apprentice. "If I had the ability to vote, I would vote for him." Felons in Illinois can vote once they leave prison, though they have to register again, according to the State Board of Elections. Now that Blagojevich is out of prison, there was little sign of change in him other than his trademark jet-black hair turning white behind bars. Outside his home, the poetry quoting Blagojevich demonstrated not even a hint of remorse for the multiple counts of political corruption the jurors convicted him on. Blagojevich took no questions after his remark Wednesday, in which he echoed Trump by portraying himself as a victim of a federal justice system run amok. In a tweet he fired off while Blagojevich was still speaking in Chicago Wednesday, Trump hit on the same themes. As he has done before, Trump compared efforts to investigate his own conduct to federal prosecutors who took down Blagojevich. Trump's tweet described Blagojevich's case as another James Comey and gang deal. Trump's tweet also alluded to Blagojevich's convictions for seeking to exchange an appointment to the U.S. Senate seat vacated by then-President-elect Barack Obama for campaign contributions. Rod Blagojevich did not sell the Senate seat, Trump tweeted. Prosecutors have said, however, that they decided to arrest then-Governor Blagojevich at his home on the morning of December 9, 2008, so they could stop him before he could actually commit that crime. A political science professor at Northwestern University in Evanston, Jaime Dominguez, agreed that if Blagojevich could help Trump's reelection bid, any such help would be minimal. Blagojevich's complaints could possibly resonate with Trump's base about there being a deep state out to get Blagojevich and Trump, that federal prosecutors go after people who speak their minds, he said. During the press event, Blagojevich continually dabbed a cut on his chin with a handkerchief as he spoke, apologizing for bleeding and explaining it was a consequence of living behind bars. Black History Month, sharing to inspire. Decatur native Antonio Burton demonstrates his art at Millikan by Valerie Wells, Decatur. Antonio Burton's paintings are vibrant in primary colors that stand out even from across the room in Millikan University's Commons building. Burton's visit and a live painting demonstration were part of Millikan's Black History Month activities. They promoted it around school, so we've known about this since the school opened for the semester, said Chinna Shields, a human services major. I like his art because it's black history and it's something different. I like his use of black faces. You think it's like a character, but there's a meaning behind it. It's deeper. His animations are really vibrant, and it's attractive. The artist, also known as Tony Picasso, has been painting and drawing since he was 3 years old. It started off with my mom letting me draw on the wall, Burton said with a grin. She just kept it going on, and when I got out of hand, she just bought me supplies. When I started off in college, I wanted to be a teacher. When I got home from class, I was always painting. So I was like, you know what, let me just switch it to art education. From there, he moved into studio art and became an art director for adults with disabilities. Now he works at Hogan Prep Middle School in Kansas City, Missouri, as a behavior interventionist in addition to his art. As a behavior interventionist, he looks for patterns in students' behavior, such as a child who always acts out after lunch, which is a busy time of day for him. Instead of punishing them, we try to figure out why, he said. It could be difficulty transitioning from elementary school when there was recess after lunch, or it could be that something happened at lunch that upset the child, or an event in the child's life that has nothing to do with school but that the child can't process or express any other way. Burton finds ways to help the child cope, whether that's an activity like drawing or writing, or just talking it out. Burton knows about coping with traumatic events in life because he had a cousin who was killed. Every day during that time of day, he knows he's going to feel a certain way. By showing kids how to understand the reasons for their feelings and reactions, he can help them spot the patterns themselves and learn ways to handle the feelings. My full job is to be a servant and a listener, he said. His art, too, expresses emotions and feelings. Life inspires me, he said. I am a believer, so the gift that God gave me is art, and I use that and share it with everybody to inspire them. If you're interested in paint, I can teach you how to paint. I can teach you how to draw. But I pull out more what's in you versus what I want you to be. One of his inspirations is poet Gwendolyn Brooks, whose portrait he painted on Wednesday afternoon to allow Millikan students to watch the process. He had already sketched her face in pencil and planned an abstract background with the most focus on her eyes, he said. The prolific author of more than 10 poetry collections, Brooks described her work as folksy narrative. She used forms ranging from free verse to sonnets with themes of social issues, portraits of black urban poor, and politics. In 1950, she was awarded the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry for her book Annie Allen, becoming the first African-American woman to receive the honor. From 1968 to her death in 2000, Brooks served as the poet laureate for the state of Illinois. One of the things that resonates most with Burton, he said, is the idea that if you think of yourself as royalty, the way you carry yourself and treat other people will change. One of the paintings on display at Millikan on Wednesday was of a young black boy with a crown just sketched above his head. Burton got the idea from seeing a photo of a child in a suit, surrounded by adult men also wearing suits. I let the painting tell me when it's finished, he said. Every artist can always add more. Paintings are never really finished. Road safety. State to add four-way stop at Moultrie County intersection. Two died last fall in accident at busy crossroads on Illinois 32 by Kennedy Nolan, Moultrie County. The Illinois Department of Transportation plans to add a four-way stop at a Moultrie County intersection where a Sullivan Elementary student and Decatur woman were killed in a crash last fall. Paul Wapple, Public Information Officer for IDOT, said the agency will begin plans this summer, but it's too early to tell when it will be completed. Illinois 32 and Moultrie County Road 800 North, also known as the Bruce Findlay Road, cross 5.5 miles south of Sullivan and just over 6 miles north of Windsor. Lawmakers and residents began calling for changes there after the September 27th crash between a sport utility vehicle and a school bus killed 5-year-old Tyson G. Mendoza of Gays and Lori E. Samples, 56, of Decatur. While drivers traveling east and west meet a stop sign at the intersection, those going north and south on the state highway do not stop. While the effort gained momentum after the September tragedy, community leaders had long identified the intersection as a problem. IDOT data obtained by the Herald and Review showed that it the site of 3 fatalities since 2010 and 28 total crashes from January 1, 2008 to December 31, 2018. Moultrie County Board Chairman Dave McCabe previously told the Herald and Review that county leaders have discussed the intersection for years, a sentiment he reiterated Wednesday. Some changes to the intersection were made in October and November, Wapple said. IDOT moved guide signs to the back side of the ditch in the northwest corner and replaced LED stop signs with standard signs. The red flashing beacons remain on top. The department also replaced the signs that read, IL-32 does not stop, look both ways, to standard cross-traffic does not stop signs. Business and commercial signs in the area were decluttered, Wapple said. State Senator Chapin Rose, Republican Mahomet, and State Representative Brad Holbrook, Republican Shelbyville, both praised the action by IDOT on Wednesday. This was extremely important to me that someone outside the state of Illinois look at this, and IDOT agreed at my request to reach out to the Federal Highway Authority to get their input on this intersection, Rose said. We're all pleased that IDOT is going to proceed with a four-way stop at the intersection. Holbrook also said he has had multiple conversations with IDOT concerning the safety of the intersection. IDOT officials told the Herald and Review in early October that the agency would conduct a road safety assessment. Representatives of IDOT, the Federal Highway Administration, and the Illinois State Police conducted the review over 2 days that month, and the report was released Wednesday. IDOT defines a road safety assessment as a formal, independent, and comprehensive safety performance review of a road transportation project conducted by a team of safety specialists. The analysis consisted of classifying crashes by characteristics and developing crash diagrams, as well as identifying crash patterns, risk, and other relevant factors. The assessment team visited the site to observe and document safety risks and factors under different traffic, weather, and light conditions. The observations helped the team evaluate how proposed improvements could affect the existing conditions. Sullivan's population is under 5,000, and Windsor is home to just over 1,000. But the heavily trafficked intersection sees thousands of vehicles drive through daily. Roughly 11,500 vehicles pass through the area daily on average. Traffic is broken down as follows. The west leg sees 2,200 vehicles on average daily. The east leg, 2,250 vehicles. The north leg, 4,400 vehicles. And the south leg, 2,650 vehicles. The study, which analyzed crashes between 2010 and 2018, said peak time crashes occurred was around 9 and 10 a.m., and then again around 4 and 5 p.m. The most crashes took place on Sundays. The agency released three levels of recommendations to improve driver safety, ranging from some that could be implemented quickly to major long-term changes. Some measures have already been taken. Short-term recommendations included more officers on patrol during peak crash hours, adding stop ahead pavement markings, simplifying and standardizing sign assemblies, and moving guide signs to the other side of the ditch. Some mid-level changes included converting the intersection to a four-way stop, which is now IDOT's plan. The department recommended the long-term solution would be to convert the intersection to a roundabout. Moultrie County will coordinate with IDOT to incorporate those suggestions pertinent to Moultrie County into an IDOT contract, said Jeffrey Birch, Moultrie County Highway Engineer. Tracy Willoughby, who started a petition to put stoplights at the intersection, said she's glad IDOT took action. The four-way stop signs are better than nothing, she said. It's kind of a win because she'd prefer a stoplight. Wapple said there's no cost estimate at this time and advises all drivers use their undivided attention while on the road. 5 years in prison for driver in fatal DUI by Tony Reed, Decatur. Sidney J. Flynn, the Decatur drunk driver who ran down and killed his girlfriend, was sentenced to 5 years in prison Wednesday. As Macon County Circuit Court Judge Thomas Griffith pronounced sentence, there were gasps and cries of anguish from court benches packed with relatives and friends of the 23-year-old victim, Brittany M. Shelton. One woman, who was escorted out of the courtroom, cried out, 5 expletive years for murder? 5 expletive years? Other family members broke down in tears and had to leave the court, unable to contain their emotions. They had wanted Flynn to get the maximum allowed under a sentencing deal negotiated by his attorney, Philip Tibbs. That had seen Flynn, 28, plead guilty to a charge of aggravated driving under the influence of alcohol causing death, with a sentencing range stretching from probation to a cap of 12 years, all custodial sentences to be served at 85%. As part of the deal, a charge of reckless homicide and three additional counts of aggravated DUI were dismissed against the defendant, who has a previous DUI conviction from 2011. Shelton's mother, Heather Yancey, was one of several family members who had earlier made victim impact statements. Yancey, sobbing, told Flynn he had made her life unbearable without her daughter, who had left a young son who can't understand where mommy is. Yancey continued, "I can't have her back. No one can, 'cause she was run down like a dog. I pray you get the maximum sentence for this crime, because you gave me a life sentence with no parole." Shelton had died about 2:30 a.m. February 16, 2019. She had been out drinking with Flynn at a Decatur bar the previous night and then continued drinking with him and friends at a house on Green Hill Road, authorities had said. There had been an argument and they had left, Flynn driving off in a large pickup truck while Shelton looked for a lost cell phone before setting off herself on foot. Decatur police officer Craig Lundy, an accident reconstruction expert, told the court that Shelton had been walking in the middle of the 3500 block of Green Hill Road near the crest of a hill when she was hit from behind by Flynn's truck, flying along at an estimated speed of 55 to 60 miles per hour in a 30-mile-per-hour speed limit zone. The force of the impact severed Shelton's spine. Lundy said an autopsy showed she was killed at the scene by this and other massive injuries. Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott said Flynn had not called for help initially after the crash, but had instead called a friend from the party and asked him to help move Shelton's body, which the friend refused. Flynn had also called his father and had left it to others to call the police. Several hours after the crash, he was found to have a blood alcohol level of 0.091. The legal limit is 0.08. He also had traces of cannabis in his urine. Scott called the speed involved in the accident, Flynn's impairment, and his actions afterwards as outrageous. Asking for a maximum sentence of 12 years, he added, he's obviously learned nothing from the DUI which he had previously. Flynn had stood up in court to tell Shelton's family he was sorry and to insist, while they believed the collision was intentional, it was a genuine accident. It was very hard on me also. I find it hard to sleep sometimes, Flynn added. I've done my best to get through. Careers in Customer Service Seminar Planned, Decatur. Registration for Careers in Customer Service will be 9:30 a.m. today and Monday, February 24th, at the Richland Workforce Education Consortium inside the Decatur Public Library. Students will be able to brush off reading and math skills and learn about jobs in the field of hospitality. A job shadowing experience will be offered at the end of the training. Allow 2 hours for registration. Child care is not available. Call 217-875-7211, extension 6264. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, February 20th, 2020. Please stay tuned.